Tonight on the Guy at the Movies podcast, we are joined by Gal from Film Toppings, and Sean has returned from his siesta. Sean, how are you?
I am sunburnt and finally sober.
And how was karaoke?
Oh, I was sunburnt then and also not sober.
Sounds like a good way to start. We'll see you on the other side.
Hayden. Everyone is part of the family at this point.
It used to be my fan fiction idea that I had. So this movie was garbage.
What is this?
You are a monster beyond all belief.
Put them all in the thing and let them do the thing, you know what I mean?
How? You know, you're lucky to have me back.
You're never going to get 60 million people because you're not a Super Bowl. Shut up.
So chaotic.
Welcome to the Guy at the Movies podcast. I am Joe. He is Sean. And we are joined for episode 159 by international film superstar, Film Toppings, Gal himself. How are you, Gal?
I'm good. That's quite the intro. It's great to be back on the stream. I know Sean's been on me and my friend Alan's podcast before, Film Fanatics. So a very poetic moment today.
Excellent. We've been trying to get you on, or wanting to get you on, I should say, intending to have you on. So we're glad that you're here because we have some fun things to talk about. But Sean, first and foremost, people have missed the beauty of your voice for the past 2 weeks. How was vacation? How's life?
I don't know if they missed the beauty of my voice, but no, it was great. I had a little 2 week vacation. It was when a bunch of movies were coming out. So I had to put myself in an ice bath to go through the withdrawals of movies. But, I was finally able to catch up and feeling good. Yeah, I was on the Cape. I ate a lot of lobster, way too much seafood, actually. And then on the last day, I got absolutely torched by the sun. So, yeah.
We love to see that, Sean. We love to see that. You stepped into an American Idol audition while you were there, so that was wonderful.
Well, this is my reel of my karaoke to My Heart Will Go On, which I realized it was meant for comedy, but halfway through, no one was laughing, and I said, okay, this is a problem. So immediately, how do you get people to start laughing or cheering for you is you take off your shirt. So I immediately took off my shirt, and that worked, and then all of a sudden brought the house down. Yes, got a free.
It was an Ari Aster movie.
it was Ari Aster or a Bert Kreischer stand-up. The Bert Kreischer comparisons were both accurate and hurtful, but also I'll take it.
I'm sorry, why is that? Why is that not your intro? Sean's singing My Heart Will Go On.
That's a good point.
Because it's My Heart Will Go On. Because it's me singing My Heart Will Go On. It's a tough look.
Maybe that will be an additional pod that we'll release separately.
Yes, for the
post-credit scene.
The now post,
yeah, it's a post pod credit scene.
That would work out. They have those now, on some pods. They do their little B-roll or their conclusion thing. So,
Oh my gosh. Director's cut. And the Baby Math Teacher Movies is the size of the lamp from Aladdin.
It is. And I like that comparison better. There was one that was the cheese fries from Mean Girls, which never appear on screen. And so I thought that was a very poor app description. But at this point, yes, the Baby Math Teacher Movies is the size of Aladdin. At this point, it became very real for us where we don't want the baby to be born now, but the baby would be okay if she was born now. And that's a huge thing now. It's wow, that's big. And she's shouting something. What? Oh, okay. I thought she was correcting me about something.
This is math teacher movies.
Yes.
Gal, what's going on with you over there? How have things been? We haven't chatted in a while.
Yeah, I'm well. I've been watching some movies, and in about 2 weeks or so, I'll be at TIFF with some of me and Sean's mutual friends from the League of Cinephiles.
Very nice.
You're going to see an amazing lineup of actor directors. I love that TIFF is all actor directors at this point, which is awesome.
Oh yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, it should be good. Sorry, there's we're glitching out just a little bit, but we'll fix in post. Yeah, listen, we're getting into the major festival season here. TIFF especially being one of the biggest, but Venice coming up, and it seems like
Venice
all
is
of
starting.
The Yeah, Venice is just starting. It seems like all of the major, the future festivals are sending out their credentialing emails and stuff, at least asking for your submissions. So it's just wild because I always feel like Sundance is one in particular that I love, and I always finish covering it, and I'm like, oh, I have to wait a year. And then it seems like I go to sleep and wake up and they're like, hey, you want to apply for next year? So it's wild how quickly that happens. And maybe that's just a sign of being way too busy and the year going way too fast. But was something that also was very busy we need to dive into, and it's the first trailer for the day. So let's talk about Rebel Moon. A very, very interesting approach here to take Rebel Moon, which is going to be two films, and release a 25-minute trailer. No, a three-plus-minute trailer. This is Zack Snyder's fantasy-built world that is born or was born out of a Star Wars approach or a Star Wars pitch, and seems to have a lot going on. There's a lot of comparisons here to other films, I think. I'll start off and just say, I mean, I'm a Zack Snyder fanboy, so I'm always intrigued. I also am intrigued by some of the things in here. I did not like that it was a three-minute trailer that kind of didn't focus on any story, but just was like a greatest hits of everything that we're probably going to see. But let's start with Gal here. What did you think of Snyder's latest trailer?
Well, I definitely have a soft spot for these kind of movies that like have a lot of world building and stuff. Like maybe I'll piss you off here, but I wasn't like the biggest like Zack Snyder's Justice League fan. He's out. Snyder as a filmmaker, he sometimes has me like either concerned, but he also has his films that entertain me. Like 300 and Watchmen, I enjoy more. Man of Steel, I really like, but not as big of a fan of BVS here. But I really like the cast. Charlie Hunnam, always like seeing him in the big roles. And the production design, the world building looks very interesting. But there's also some shots of like the VFX that look very Netflixy, and the two movies in 4 months approach. I don't know, bro. We'll have to see, but like
that's my favorite reaction. I don't know, bro.
Every single scene is entirely different from like the scene previous, and I guess that's what a trailer is. There's going to be different worlds and stuff, but it's this seems like something where before even seeing this movie, I'm going to do the very lame take of this could have been a limited series, and because it seems like, you know, between the two parts, between the fact that he says, oh yeah, no, there's a director's cut on the way, which those don't exist when you're making your first film on Netflix, dude. That's the director's cut. You're allowed to do whatever you want on Netflix already. They let you go nuts.
In defense of him there, Netflix apparently approached him with the idea of doing a longer R-rated cut, which is the director's cut.
So why didn't he just do that? Like, why is...
why not just have one cut of one movie? Like,
because I think Netflix wants that PG-13 world building fantasy franchise.
Once Upon a Rebel Moon.
So this is not... So it's not a director's cut. It's going to be, there's a Netflix cut that is more kid appropriate. And then Zack Snyder's cut is just the movie. Maybe
Rebel Moon bigger, longer, and uncut.
I really do like love garbage sci-fi, and this is garbage sci-fi at the highest degree. I'm like a huge fan of Jupiter Ascending because of how like absolutely bonkers it is. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not exactly like, you know, casting it for award wins or anything like that. But I love like the absolute ridiculous.
No, but I get what you mean. Like Valerian or The Fifth Element.
Yeah, stuff like that. And so I'm interested in like what this will be. Yeah.
Fifth Element is far and above those other ones you mentioned.
For sure. I'm just saying it's like similar to world building. Fifth Element is not garbage. It's just like world building space opera or something.
I mean, I just look at this and two movies like within 4 months, and that's all fine, I guess, whatever. But I think that like this could have cashed in a little bit more easily digestible as a limited series, especially when you're dealing with this open world that you want to break open. And that gets tricky with cinema. And Snyder, I can imagine this guy like, you know, is just like a movie purist and just only wants to do movies, never really wants to touch a limited series. So I get him there. I do love that Snyder also managed to make the Netflix logo obnoxious. Like, Godspeed to that. It's just like, whoosh, 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 Netflix. I was like, okay, buddy. I knew I was in a Snyder movie before it even started.
It's also like the whole part one, part two thing really needs to be earned. Like, yep. Mission Impossible, I think they earned it. Fast and Furious, I don't think they earned it. Like, no. Wicked is getting two parts. Like, almost everything is going to be two parts now. Because of this new trend.
Well, they used to do that back in the day, and it was just not – it never really worked great. Even, like, stuff like when you think about the Harry Potter movie, I think that Harry Potter 7 was a spectacular movie if it wasn't put into two parts. But those two parts really, like, one of them set up, one of them's action. Alone, they don't work. Together, they're exceptional. But it gets really dicey when you have that.
Yeah, I will say – this is going to sound like I'm defending Snyder here. I'm not, because I haven't seen the movie and I don't know anything. I do think the rollout of this is really weird. To number one, to name them part one and part two, I think is a flaw going into this, just based on all of the conversation around, you know, previous Snyder movies and director's cuts and things like that. So that's number one. Number two is releasing this long trailer that doesn't really focus on story and give you an idea of what to expect beyond relying on what they hope to be a spectacle, a fantasy spectacle, I think was really odd. And I'm not loving that. There's a ton of talent in this movie. Just going to run through some of them here. But Sophia Boutella, Ray Fisher, Anthony Hopkins, Charlie Hunnam, Jenna Malone, Ed Skrein.
I think it's Skrein or Skrein. I don't know.
Yeah. Jaimin Hunsu, Bae Doona. You have Corey Stoll's in this. Cary Hughes is in this. Rupert Friend is in this. Ray Porter is back in this. Ray Porter from Justice League. But there's just so many people in this. And like it does read like a limited series. It reads like a Game of Thrones type thing. But without Matt Nolan's in this, but without having an idea what the story is and who these individual characters are, I'm not really all for it. I'm a little frustrated. So I think I want to see what they do next. I'm sure that they'll focus on individual characters with like character posters and descriptions and things like that. And maybe we'll get a more streamlined, like 1 minute trailer, just telling us what's going on, what the story is. But until we get that, I'm going to be a little skeptical. I will still watch it. I will still be excited for it because it is Zack Snyder and I'm excited to see what he does next. And with total control, it seems. But I'm also excited for fantasy. I love a good fantasy film, and that's why Dungeons and Dragons worked so well for me, because it scratched that itch. So I'm hoping that this breaks that itch open or something. I don't know.
Overscabs it.
Oh, yeah.
Starts to peel the skin off of my freaking burnt body right now.
Oh my God, Sean.
No, it's bad because like it's like right here, and so I'm doing this during my like prep period, and so I, you know, it's not great.
Next trailer is Foe, a term to describe the relationship between Sean and I right now. Foes. Yeah. Now, so Foe is an upcoming MGM and Amazon Studios film that stars Saoirse Ronan, Paul Mescal, and Aaron Pierre, and this is Garth Davis's next one. I've got to tell you, I want your opinions on this, but I'm really interested in this. Hennen Jr. Farm, a secluded piece of land that has been in Jr.'s family for generations, but their quiet life is thrown into turmoil when an uninvited stranger shows up at the door with a startling proposal. Sean, what did you think of this? Paul Mescal Supremacy, by the way.
I didn't watch the trailer.
Okay, Gal, what did you think of this?
Welcome back,
I'm pretty sure he said it's mescal. He's like on Jimmy Kimmel, and he's like, I don't know where the mescal came from. It's something like
Americans. That. It came from Americans.
So exotic. We just, you know, with that voice, he's so exotic. We're like,
no, I started it out by saying mescal. I actually think this trailer looks amazing. Like, it kind of gives like art house and sci-fi. I don't know how much you could call this art house, but like it is. It has such an interesting approach to the plot from what I can tell. And it looks like really well shot. It kind of reminds me of like another like sort of like intimate sci-fi movie, like, I don't know, like 9 Days or something where it's like about the characters, but maybe you'll see a spaceship for like a second. Also the actors I think are great. And it looks like really unpredictable, but also like exploring the relationship aspects really well. I'm really excited for this one, and I'm glad that Amazon's giving it a theatrical release.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's great that these two are in a genre film, because you know these two are just the ones that like are the future of our performance acting spectaculars. And you know, after having them in After Sun and Lady Bird is great, because those are where they're flexing their acting muscles in like the finest ways. I do like that they're like, you know, granted, this is a bit of an art house sci-fi, as you're saying, from what I'm being told. But I love that they are they're branching out to this. And I think that that's like a, like important to like try to get to those challenges, which I'm sure they will definitely reach.
Yeah.
I think Mescal is like the next. I think Mescal's like the next like Adam Driver, Florence Pugh, who's just going to be in like everything for a couple years. Then like everyone, including our parents, will know them. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him do some good stuff.
Johnny Storm, baby. Sean, the premise for this, to break it down a little bit more, is that Paul Mescal and Saoirse Ronan are together. Aaron Pierre comes down and basically says, like, you've been selected to go off into space and do some wackery. And then he turns and he goes, no, only you, to Paul Mescal's character. So that's sort of the setup for this.
Oh, yeah. I like that. A little human conflict there. Okay. Yeah.
And it seems like the trailer really does show a lot of conflict between Saoirse Ronan and Paul Mescal as it goes on, based on that premise. It looks, I actually am really impressed by this trailer. I'm really excited for it. I'm like, how did Amazon get this? MGM. But I understand.
the MGM Amazon thing is just so fascinating to me. Like, because there's an MGM Plus hanging around where there's like weird shit over there and it's just available there. And then all the other times, like, how did they get this amazing, like, you know, movie? It's like, oh, well, MGM is involved. And it's like, how are they interacting right now? I don't have this transparency.
Amazon's done like sci-fi like this before.
Oh, yeah. God, yes.
I forget the name. Riz Ahmed had like a sci-fi movie last year.
Extinction.
They also did Peripheral with Chloe Grace Moretz, which was not great. And then I don't think, and I think they just cut a season two. Well, I mean, Encounter. Cut meaning canceled season two. Yeah.
Riz Ahmed was in a lot of stuff for a while too, for a little bit. Mogul Mowgli, Encounter, Sound of Metal. Like, that was a good run for him. Venom, if you will. But yeah, this looks really interesting. I'm fascinated by this. I'm also fascinated by our third trailer. Oh, yeah. Sean and I talked a little bit offline about this. But this is Society of the Snow. It is a survivalist thriller based on a true story of the Uruguayan Air Force Flight 571 crashing in the Andes. 29 of the 45 passengers survived. And this is J.A. Bayona's return to making you want to throw up on screen based on what's going on. we ended up starting with you there, but Sean, you have some interesting takes on let's start with you on Society of the Snow.
Well, this trailer looks unbelievably beautiful, and I think the problem with that is it looks unbelievably beautiful and intricate and gritty and very visually inviting, which means it's going to be really fucked up given the subject matter. And I think that's gonna, like, it actually, like, just watching it and then seeing from the director of The Impossible, I'm like, oh fuck, this is going to be the most disgusting goddamn thing I think I'll ever see that I won't be able to keep my eyes off of because it'll be so beautiful throughout. And I really like this trailer is spectacular. Like, just incorporating those different photos of like the actual photos, which I see those photos online and nothing's disturbing about the actual photos, but just the implication of them is so fucking terrifying. Yeah. That, oh God, this is going to be like some of the most disturbing shit we'll see on Netflix. And I think like it's coming out in like December. Like I'll be holding my baby while I watch people eat each other. It's, like, I'm getting chills now thinking about it because I think they're going to do a really good job with this. And that's going to make it a really tough watch.
I think we're still waiting on the exact release date for Netflix. I know that it's premiering at Venice.
Oh, so it's this year.
Possibly. Yeah, that, I mean, that's the it says like, and then soon after or something is, I think, the language they're using.
And it was super weird because they, like, I remember The Impossible, it was nominated for a foreign film, even though, you know, everyone kind of spoke English. And I think it was because...
The Impossible was only nominated for Best Actress.
Oh, I think, okay, so that, I take that back. I think it was, there was buzz about it, like, technically it could qualify for international film or something, because even though it's spoken in English, like, they, like, it, like... It
percentage took, was like, filmed or something.
Yeah, it was a strange qualifier. So that makes sense that it wasn't nominated, but, and now this time, I don't know what the international film race looks like. I know we're thinking Zone of Interest still doesn't qualify. Does it not? I don't know.
I don't even know if Anatomy of a Fall qualifies. It's like 60% English.
There's a lot of wonky stuff happening with those. And so international film, because those two are technically, I guess, the leaders of that, if they will even qualify or count. And if not, I mean, this could swoop in. I would love to see something. I mean, Netflix now knows how to market an international film to an Oscar, apparently. But
it's also Bayona, and he's like,
beloved.
Also, I wanted to say a fun fact. You were talking about how disgusting The Impossible was. Do you know it's PG-13?
That should like not be PG-13. Not There's shit that I still think about in that movie that, like, really?
I don't think I ever saw
it. No, but I do love that movie. And I think this one looks like – it looks very difficult to watch, but it looks, like, very good in that – like, we've seen stuff like this before, but it doesn't look like it'll just – like a Lord of the Flies type survival. Yeah. It looks like it's genuinely gritty and he understands the material. I haven't seen Monster Calls yet, but I've seen, like, some other Bayona films like The Orphanage and The Impossible and I guess Jurassic World 2, even though that this feels like Universal directed it.
I forgot that he directed that. Oh my god! I remember it was like everyone was so excited, and then everyone left the theater so bummed.
Well, that's a case of being handed a prescribed film. Mm-hmm. So, guys, a little aside here. I'm listening to a new podcast, Sean. I don't know if this is in your million podcast rotation, but it's called "I've Had It," and it is these two women who just have really, they're from Oklahoma. They have really good conversations about things, but the premise of it is they start off with saying something that they've had it with. Like for instance, it's like a parent standing up at a parent teacher meeting or, you know, nosy neighbors or something like that. You know what I fucking have had it with to steal something from them? The Academy and their fucking Oscar qualifications. This bullshit. Yeah, this man. Percentage stuff, when you're talking about the percentage of in English or where it was filmed or how it was released and how long it was in theaters or how much diversity was there. And then we're pulling back on the diversity because we only cared about that for the press release, or then talking about what's a, you know, streaming movie, what went straight to TV, what's the Emmys, what's not qualifying for the Oscars. All this bullshit is so frustrating. And I know it gives us a lot of content to talk about. And you two are definitely more Oscar in tune than I am. But this is the most, what's the one, Sean, that we always bitch about? That
you hate the adapted screenplay one.
That one pisses me off so much.
That's it. It's interesting because I think there's just going to be this overhaul. The Academy has still decided to not, you know, the pandemic hit, but other than that, have not acknowledged streaming in any way. And I think that we still have that weird TV Emmy category, TV movie Emmy category, which, like, it's just such a strange, like,
them and the producers.
And so there's going to be a reckoning soon where, like, once the last theater finally closes down, they'll be like, okay, maybe now we'll recognize streaming movies.
It's always awesome. Now that it's like a one TV movie category, it's always like some Dolly Parton special winning the TV movie.
Chippendale.
And it's like one regular movie. Like
it's
each year there's like one regular
Dolly Parton's
movie.
Mountain
like,
Time Christmas special, yeah.
Exactly. Prey, Dolly Parton, Weird the Al Yankovic story because Roku didn't want to send it to theaters, and that's it.
That was a lot of fun.
It's just such a strange thing when something like Weird Weird was like on the festival circuit. And, you know,
I was at the
was promoting
TIFF premiere of that movie. And I was like, I was watching with a crowd and laughing with them. Like, they don't want to send it to
the Emmys. I
don't
understand this. Like, it's so weird. Ugh.
I watched it with Weird Al Yankovic. He showed up to the Philly premiere of it.
he was the most like that would have like gotten Oscar nominations because he would have just went everywhere and shook every producer's hand. Like
to this day, he's still talking about it.
He's so happy.
Yeah, so interesting stuff coming down the road. I mean, the three that we just focused on, just to remind you here, were all streaming born. So Rebel Moon, Foe, and Society of the Snow are driving a lot of the content that we're looking forward to in the next couple of months. It's going to be interesting to see how things shift. I wonder if we're going to see more released on streaming again, similar to kind of what happened with the onset of the pandemic, due to the fact that many films can't be promoted the way that they want to, even though there are some interim agreements that are allowed to be honored by the actors and they're allowed to promote their films on the festival circuit. Certain films specifics, I don't even know the specifics, but we're gonna talk a little bit more about that after we talk about the big movie of the week that kept like kind of limping towards theaters. It was one that I forgot was a thing, and then when the strike happened they delayed it a couple weeks in the U.S. We're hoping for word of mouth. I think that looks like it helped a little bit. It's still not going to have the biggest box office opening, but I hope that drink is good, gal, because that was a really healthy straw suck.
Did you get it all?
You have a good microphone.
Yeah. Oh, God. I should have muted.
No, it was perfect.
You got the cough button?
It's okay. I'm shoving a bagel.
That's for your intro.
Top.
Nah.
I do love Joe right now, like, you know, apologies to those just listening, but Joe quickly grabbing a bite of a bagel almost off camera, but not totally, has been magical. It's just like kind of...
Listen, first night back in my apartment, and I slept in my own bed for the first time in a month last night, and it was wonderful.
Yeah, but one of the walls are just going to turn into spiders or something. I don't know what the hell's going to happen to your place next.
While I've been awake for like 3 hours, I was laying in bed cuddling with my dog for a good 2 hours of that, and I'm like, shit, I got to get up. Anyway,
I get that.
Gran Turismo, a video game movie, if you will, but an odd video game movie because it's based on a true story, which also is a very odd true story. But in the film, Jan Martinborough, who is played, I'm terrible with names.
Archie Madekwe.
You're my pronunciation guy now. Archie Madekwe, an expert at the Sony PlayStation video game simulator Gran Turismo, finds himself winning a number of competitions sponsored by Nissan that thrust him out of the gaming chair and into the driver's seat of a real car at a camp focused on taking a gamer to an actual race car driver. Guys, I'm going to start right away and just say this was a nice surprise for me.
Yep.
I actually had a lot of fun with this. I think some of the racing scenes are phenomenal. The way that they kind of integrate the whole video game feel with the actual racing itself was really unique. And this is from Neil Blomkamp, who we talked about a little bit offline with District 10 rumors floating around again. He's definitely riding this high of Gran Turismo being well received. The first part I thought was a little slow, but once it really gets going, and it really actually gets going pretty quickly when you think back to it, or when I think back to it, I was hooked. By the end of it, I was like, I had those sports movie feels where you're like wanting to see success and you're rooting for the characters. And I will say that I think David Harbour was incredible here. I think this was a standout role for him, and I did not expect that.
Yeah, I mean, I realize this, that the inspirational sports movies right now have been cornered by the faith-based film market. And so at this point, it's been kind of a bummer. We haven't really seen any that are just like good old-fashioned inspirational sports movies. And so like to see that, I love this. Now, it's interesting because in a way, it does start out slow, but because of how fast it goes, where it's like the movie starts with Orlando Bloom, like running into the room and just being like, like explain the whole premise. And then all of a sudden it's underway and it's moving way too fast for like me to like, they're planting so many seeds and I can't really like keep track of what I should be watching. Then finally, like once they start racing, I'm like, okay, no, I'm good. Do whatever you want with the writing of this. Like I love what the racing scenes. I thought they were fantastic. I was like, hey, if you can get me to sit up in my theater, especially one that where it reclines, I'm in. And so I sat up for a lot of the racing scenes. And so that got me interesting. I think, one of the flaws, like I said, is the beginning. The other flaw, God bless him. Maybe he was just a poorly written character, so I don't want to blame it completely on his performance, but the lead was just not great. It was just very boring. And I don't think they give him a lot. So that was my issue, but the other three performers, though, Orlando Bloom, David Harbour, and Jaimon Hounsou, who blink and you miss him, like all of his movies, is exceptional. They were so good. And I think that, like, this is just one of these things where I was going to do a rant about this, where it's like, for the love of God, Jaimon Hounsou, get this guy a career. He's got two Oscar nominations, both deserved. In this, he puts, like, so much passion into what should be, like, this cliched, shitty role of, like, disapproving parent, and instead is amazing. David Harbour, great as the coach. David Harbour was cast like perfectly, disgruntled, grumpy coach. And I was like, okay, cool. Like that eventually is won over. And then everyone's talking about Orlando Bloom and how weird he looks. And yeah, he does look a little bit weird. I don't know what's going on there, but I guess just age. But I really loved his like weird passion, starry eye, way of dealing with this. And then also having to like be bureaucratic with his popularity and stuff. Yeah. Like when that happens and he's like, we can't market this guy as well as the other one. I loved he had to go back and forth and like kind of fight with him, his own inner conflict on that. So all in all, I like this movie quite a bit. Definitely has its flaws, but it's made up for in the end.
Which that last point you made is why I would argue that the lead was actually solid for the role he was given when you talk
yeah,
about.
Yeah, I guess you could see that. Yeah.
With that, I agree.
What's that, Gal?
No, I do agree. I think Yan was like good enough. He's not like life changing performance, but he did quite good. David Harbour was excellent. I also think he just like he just took the role, understood the assignment, and like gave it his best. And I love how he went from like grumpy to mentor, which we've seen before, but it being Harper, I think also in Stranger Things, he has like this like grumpy, I don't know, whenever he's grumpy, it just works. And
grumpy like, old men reboot coming down the road.
Oh, they'll put him in that. They put him in
Hellboy. Even Santa, he's good.
Oh, Santa. I forgot about Santa.
I actually was going to say this role is kind of like a watered down Santa in oil.
Out of context, people would be like, if they didn't know that movie, they'd be like, what the hell are you talking about?
Violent Night is what we're referring to.
That's actually a fun film. But I don't think I liked Gran Turismo as much as you guys. I thought it was okay, but definitely not like as a negative as I was. Because when I saw the trailer, I don't remember which movie, either like, I don't know, one of the movies, like Mission Impossible or Indiana Jones, they had the trailer, and I'm like, this looks really dumb. And then I find out it's based on a true story, and I'm like, oh, okay then. So they're not out of their minds for writing this plot. And so I think the whole underdog, like, this dude's dreams become reality in the crazy way, I think that part is uplifting. But I feel like the first two acts were either dragged out or kind of sappy in a way. And once you get to like that final race, which is like 20, 30 minutes long, I was really enjoying it and rooting for the main character's success. Even though I will say like some of the editing and the racing scenes or the training scenes was a little too like montage-y for me. They could have let it breathe a little more. You know what I mean?
Sports movie.
It was interesting.
They were doing it like constantly in the first act.
Yeah,
really enjoyed that, and we talked about this, that the actual guy was a stunt driver, which is such a cool thing that should have been marketed way more. Like, that's something you promote a lot, where it's like, oh, the actual guy is a stunt driver. That's something that would catch a lot more articles. And I didn't hear about that until the end of the damn movie, which is a waste of, you know, I mean, not a waste of it. It's still great, but like a waste of an opportunity for marketing. I just love that there was a mix of the practical with. There was a few moments where it's like, whoa, that was a tough day in the visual effects office with that explosion and stuff. But for the most part, like the practical nature of it with the blend of the visual does work pretty well. And I love that a lot of the racing was practical because, you know, I get out of Fast X and there wasn't a single car on set. They're just like, it's just a bunch of computers.
Green chair.
And that was some of the most important things. I just want to also shout out, Darren Barnett, who is Paxton Hall Yoshida in Never Have I Ever, who is just kind of like annoyingly attractive. Like, I see that guy, and I'm like, yeah, go fuck yourself. Like, but he's one of the other racers, and I like that they brought back the other racers towards the end. I think that was because I didn't like the beginning of this movie, and so when they bring that back, I'm like, oh, it's good to like have that connection back, and that really did work. And you know,
but I was going to bring that up. I loved that part of the story. It really kind of brought things full circle and was exciting to see. And I'm looking at a lot of this cast, and a lot of this cast is just ridiculously attractive.
So annoying.
Like, and it's very frustrating.
Get the hell out of here. Yeah. One of the biggest flaws that's not really a flaw, that's the fault of the movie, but ending with the 24-hour Le Mans just makes me think of Ford v. Ferrari. And I'm like, that's a problem. Like, then I understand this is a true story, and so they had to like stick with facts. But when they showed that race, I was just like, oh no! This is Ford v. Ferrari station. You do your own thing somewhere else.
You ain't no Ken Miles.
This is also kind of a more accessible Ford v. Ferrari. I mean, obviously, it's not as intricate as a story, but when it comes down to, if you want to just call it a racing movie that ends up at the same place, it's kind of the same thing there. Nobody has mentioned the wonderful addition and the incredible acting talents of Ginger Spice, Jerry Halliwell, in this. So I would just like for both of you to reconsider your positions as
that was Connors Ginger kid. Spice.
What yes, the fuck?
As the mom.
Oh my! I'm like on the IMDb right now. I'm looking at her. She's staring back at me. I'm not hating it.
I forgot that she was in this. I didn't realize until afterwards when I was starting to like take notes for my review of like the actual names of the.
I didn't know that until now.
Yeah, surprise. But yeah, I was like, oh yeah, that was her. I forgot that she was in it because I remember, Sean, we made fun of that when it was in the trailer and it like showed her or showed her name or something. And I was like, oh, she's in this.
I do actually remember you calling that out because I have no knowledge of any of this stuff.
Yep.
Hey, well, Joseph Kosinski is directing another racing movie. Maybe you can give Mel B her shot in the Hollywood.
Oh my gosh.
Well, Baby Spice can do the Little Tykes movie coming out soon or something.
Oh my gosh.
The fucking
I will say though,
weeks off.
I will say though, I do really, really like Jaimin Hansu's work in this movie. Because they really gave him a lot of gravitas that I guess I wasn't expecting, because I just thought he was there to be like strict dad.
Yeah.
But you know, like I think for a lot of people, even like movie lovers, he's kind of just the guy who shows up. Like he'll just be like the guy who was in Rebel Moon here and Guardians of the Galaxy there. But he is really talented. Like I'm sure you all have seen Blood Diamond. In America. And
I saw a lot of In America. Amistad,
like he's
yeah.
Ooh, that's an interesting point.
Like that but last
I think
scene,
like he really is talented.
Like, that's In America.
And like recently there was some article where he talked about how he's like been in the industry for 30 years. He's like almost 60 and he's still like struggling to get paid what he needs. And I'm like, that's just wild. Like he's excellent and he's been in such high profile movies and like helped elevate them.
Like it's crazy. And you know, I was making my review for this and I was looking for like pictures of this and everything like that. I can only find one picture of him in this movie. And so I'm like, okay, so already like we're just like, I don't know whose fault that is in any sort of promo thing, but like this guy should be, granted he only has like five lines, but he makes the most out of that. And he's in like premiered in the trailer already. And so I'm already like interested. Like if it was someone else there, I wouldn't be as interested. I mean, and so he's got such a guttural talent and knows how to just mine for emotion in the best of ways. And listen, I like that he gets to be like the 12th male lead in Fast X and the 14th male lead in Guardians. And I guess you get a decent paycheck for those, but I want this guy in the forefront and I want him like, you know, actually like we see a story about him where he goes through suffering. He has that ability so much more than so many of these actors.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It is kind of interesting. I wonder sometimes if it's a preference from these actors to kind of be a supporting role and be known as, I mean, think about all the stuff that we're referencing him in. And I wonder if that's, you know, I wonder if that's
he's basically the lead in Blood Diamond.
True.
But he's like credited as supporting because Leo.
Here you go,
like,
Joe. Not according to the Academy.
Guy. Exactly.
I've had it.
Call into the I've had it crew.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to send this clip to them. All right. So final ratings for this, Gal, out of five, where do you land on this?
Like 3 out of 5. It's watchable enough. Definitely. Like I saw it with a friend who he's like a big racing Formula One fan. And he was like really satisfied. So if you're looking for this kind of movie, it delivers. Yeah. But I wouldn't say it's a must.
Yeah, I gave it a B. So, I mean, translates to about 4 out of 5. I will say that it's gotten a cinema score of an A. And that makes sense because you leave the theater floating. Like, they leave you in the most impactful way with, like, the win of a race. And so, pardon, spoiler, who cares? So you leave the theater pretty solidly floating. And so, like, pretty much at that moment, you're just going to be, like, you hit the A button on the way out. I don't know how cinema scores work, but it's like X Factor. Oh, I can imagine if that's how it is. It's the voice, and your chair is around for the whole movie until you want to turn around to watch it. And you just hit, and it just goes around.
But if like Sean hears Jaimin Hansu's voice.
Yeah, that's not our world, son.
If the chairs don't turn around by a certain point, the movie just shuts off.
Yeah, because otherwise you're watching 90 minutes of a wall.
The Morbius would turn off after like 5 minutes, but.
Whoa. Yeah, it will. I go 4 out of 5 on this. I'll go out on a limb here. I do think that this is going to be looked back on as one of the more satisfying sports movies in the past decade. I think part of it is because it just plays it very clean. It is based on a true story. And I think, Sean, the point you made earlier, I hadn't really thought about that, but it is not a faith-based film, which this isn't a knock on faith-based films, but they do cater to a certain population. And I think that this is a very accessible story that is very rewarding and feels great at the end of it. And sometimes in a world that is very fucked up, we want a movie that leaves us floating on a high at the end. And I think this successfully does that. I think once people discover it more, probably on streaming, I would say streaming is probably going to show a lot of success to this. But what, Sean?
I'm sorry. I had to bring this up because it was a tender moment in the movie, but it made me laugh my ass off, is when he gives him the
cassette
Sony
player.
Equivalent of an iPod. And it's like Sony Music Player. The whole thing.
Product placement.
And I just pissed myself laughing because they have that gigantic Sony that starts it.
It's insane.
I always cite y'all remember the beginning of Amazing Spider-Man 2 where Peter Parker's dad steals important files and it's Sony Vio clearly in the camera.
You know, bless their hearts for continuing to try to get that shit out there.
I don't begrudge them. You obviously have to do that when it's a Sony film, but it's just here's the music player for Sony. There's not even a name for it. At least Microsoft has a fucking Zune.
Apple has literally discontinued the iPod, and these companies are still trying to push their shit.
Imagine if every company imagine it's the Marvels and it's Kamala Khan's family is watching Hercules on Disney Plus or something.
Bluey starts.
I'm into it. In Red, White, and Royal Blue, when they're laying on the hammock, the one guy's reading the author's other book.
Oh, that's good. See, that's a fun one though, because that's not glaringly psychotically obvious.
That's an Amazon movie, right?
Yeah. Yes.
They're watching The Boys.
Yeah.
There's a framed picture of Bezos in every room.
All right, let's get to the news, and we've talked a lot about studios, so let's talk about their latest fuckery here. The Writers Guild of America met with the studios the other day. This was really interesting. So to give you a backdrop, the writers are at over 105, 107 days on strike. The Actors Guild has crossed 40 yet, but they're around there. So things do not seem to be moving at all. There was a meeting with some of the top, the heads of the companies, heads of the major companies, Bob Iger et al., and the Writers Guild negotiating team this past week. And the Writers Guild left and basically said that they were just trying to strong arm them into accepting the proposal, and they weren't interested in a discussion about the nuanced pieces of it. They said, quote, "The loopholes, limitations, and omissions in their modest proposal, too numerous to single out, make them effectively toothless," which I think is a really good quote. Anytime you can use toothless, I love that. So it just seems like there is nothing. There's nothing.
One of them left is the dragon from How to Train Your Dragon.
Toothless. Toothless. During the meeting with the CEOs, we spent 2 hours explaining that though progress has been made, the language of the AMPTP's offer was, as is typical of that body, a version of giving with one hand and taking back with another. So long story short, it doesn't seem like we're making any progress here, or they're making any progress. So Gal, I know Sean's take on a lot of this. What do you think it's going to take to end this, or do you see it ending anytime soon? Can you solve this for all of us?
I wish.
Well, now we know how it's going inside the rooms. Jeez. Yes.
Basically, I don't know, pay people, bro.
Pay people, bro. There you go. Pay people, bro.
Pause. There's an easy solution that just one side is not handling. And it's just that's the baffling part to me. I want to just chime in very quickly and say that there's been a recent move to change AMPTP to AMPTS. And this is because right now it's producers are looked at as the enemy, and producers are no, we side with the talent, and almost all producers side with the talent. This is the studio heads that are like this, and so they want to change that P to an S for studios, and there hasn't been an official word.
That's
on
their
that.
Priority right now.
Actually is more of that was something I heard on a podcast, Strike Talk, and it's one of the guys, one of the writers says they should change the AMPTP doesn't give a shit about that name. They don't care that everyone hates them. This is more from actual producers that aren't a part of that saying no, we're not these guys.
Leave us out of this.
Yeah, exactly. So I think they want to change.
Actually,
that,
not all producers. Not all producers.
Fine producers on both sides.
I do. Yeah. That was good. I do think, I hope these guys get in touch. Almost everything I have to say is very similar to what a lot of people are saying. What is happening is there's a lot of change And with change, there needs to come, like, you know, people being held accountable, people like establishing new contracts and rules, especially like the streaming residuals. There's so much concern over that, which I never got why Netflix is just like refuses to be transparent with their numbers and like why they can't with actors so they can make sure they're like compensated fairly. Also, yeah, I just feel like there's also this great clip that I watched on Instagram with Ilana Glazer, and she was just like, these guys, like these studio heads, they don't live on the same planet as us. They do not interact as us. They are not in touch with us. And I'm like, you go. Like, that's a lot of passion. Yeah. But at the same time, but I feel like probably everything that we have now in the industry that's a norm probably came from some sort of resistance. So yep. What I think is, I feel like the studios owe it to their workers to be like, yeah, we're not going to steal you with AI or whatever, because they value film and et cetera as content, but the directors, writers, actors value it as art or as story, as, you know, human connection, the way we always have. So, you know, personally, I don't want us to turn into Joan is Awful, where everything we watch was just made by an AI.
Yeah, it's so tricky, because I think that when the pandemic hit, I may have made this point, but when the pandemic hit, just like every single studio on the planet made their own streaming service, which was a bad idea. And they didn't realize it was a bad idea, but it's financially unsustainable. So I'm not justifying their actions right now, but that like is where they're coming from, is that their businesses are all kind of fucked. Now, with that, that's their own fault. They should be the ones to deal with the fact that like they took on that risk of starting a streaming service and not realizing that it can't be financially sustainable. And you know, to answer, hey, why can't Netflix just you know, like say the truth about their numbers and stuff? It's like, well, because there's no governing body that says they can't have to. So they can literally lie and say that Heart of Stone was their best watched film of all time, which, you know, that the words Heart of Stone and best can never really
be. That was Extraction too, thank you.
Yeah, there we go. So they have those little things, and they could just say that, and it just is like, you know, like I'm a moron and I look at the top 10 watched recently, and I'm like, oh, what are the top 10 watched recently? And I'm like, this is just them cultivating it for me, what they want me to watch. It's not actually anything legit. And you know,
it's always like Murder Mystery 2 number one.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh yeah, no, like, I didn't even see the first one. How could that be top of my algorithm? Like, come on.
Especially your algorithm.
Yeah, my algorithm. It's like your algorithm is fucked. 90s political thrillers. Just like Murder Mystery 2. It's such an unfortunate thing, because this strike will end. This strike will end, and it will end with writers and actors getting that fair compensation, getting those deals. That's just going to happen. And, you know, I forget who it was, Matt Bellamy on the Town podcast. He couldn't say the names of the people, but he said there's a lot of people right now working very hard. He doesn't want to out them, but like that, where this is actually going to like conclude. And, you know, if we want to do a segue, I was thinking that like, hey, Dune Part 2 kind of knows that this is great. Like, you know, they're thinking like this thing could end soon. So there was a double bad news there, where when Dune Part 2 got delayed, it was like, it sucks that we don't get to see the movie right away, but also this genuinely means that like this strike was not heading in the positive direction that those behind Dune Part 2 thought it was going to be heading in. And I think that, you know, Dune was a part of that day in day bullshit from Max before. And I went to see it in theaters because Timothy Chalamet told me to do so on TikTok. And so like genuinely, there was that same TikTok that came where he said, see it in theaters. And I'm like, you're cute. Yeah, sure.
That's such a Timothy thing.
And so then I understand the delay. I jumped into the next story without even consulting you, but it's getting dicey.
I want to call something out, because there is a part of this back and forth that's really frustrating to me. And this happens in the letter that the email that the WGA sent out to their members. They list all the companies, the major companies, their annual costs for film and I guess in television, or I guess production, I would say, and then their annual revenues and the cost percentage of those revenues. What is a little disingenuous here is that these are when you're citing the revenue of Apple at $394.3 billion and then saying that the annual cost of the proposed contract would be $17 million. That's great. And you're saying it's 0.004% of their annual revenues. Sure. However, the more I think telling number would be what the percentage is of the allocated Amazon Studio, or I mean Apple Studios or Apple Plus, whatever it is, because a lot of these companies have their hands in a lot of different things, and the studio aspect of it, think about Amazon, I won't say it's an afterthought, but it's a much smaller part of their larger company. So the numbers here are a little interesting with me. I think Warner Brothers Discovery in particular, you know, that's one that I think is a little bit more specific, and Netflix as well, into I think those numbers go a longer way to telling the story of like, hey, this is just a small, we're just asking for a little bit. But when you're talking about Disney and people are like, they're an $82.7 billion, company. Sure. A huge part of that is theme parks. Yeah. And it's not like they're just going to be like, oh yeah, let's take away from Mickey's fantastical like dick measuring contest and put it into this con, you know, there's
legal fees.
Like there's a lot of different, you know, there's buckets here, and they should reprioritize and figure that out. But I think we just have to be a little bit more honest with these numbers. And that's not in defense of them. Like, these people need to get paid. And I fully support the WGA, but sometimes I see these numbers in these like quick hit articles or social media posts, and I'm like, what the fuck?
All right,
I'll be fine after Frozen 3.
Measure from the bottom of the shaft. We've been over this shit.
I hate you so much. Listen, we're gonna oh my god, we're gonna jump around a little bit here and just say that they'll be fine after Frozen 3, but they'll probably the Frozen podcast will really help them here.
Podcast will pay off the writers.
They'll pay off the writers just to link these stories. It's a Frozen sequel podcast. It's a Frozen sequel podcast that's going to be set after the events of Frozen 2, and it is called Frozen Forces of Nature, starring Sandra Bullock. And it will continue the beloved Frozen franchise and reunite listeners with Anna and Elsa. The series takes place after Frozen 2 and introduces new characters, including Queen Disa and Lord Wolfgang Puck. This is from Collider. They're seeing it as, quote, a significant moment for kids podcasting. And the first time that they're extending a franchise into another realm. Guys, my question for you here, number one, is will this save Disney? And number two, is this just yet another example of the company expecting you to consume every ounce of content to be prepared for the next piece of content they're going to shove down your throat, a la Marvel making you watch 17 series before you see the next Marvel film?
Oh, please. Ahsoka definitely didn't require on you watching Rebels. Having every single Rebels character there. All the
I still
Rebels
haven't seen Rebels.
Then if you've seen Ahsoka, you're going to be pretty confused. Although I heard it translates well, but...
Okay, now that didn't answer any of my questions, Sean. So, like, listen, you're off the rails today.
go for it.
I don't think it'll be, like, critical to listen... I can't believe I'm saying this. I don't think it will be critical to listen to this podcast before watching Frozen 3, but I do think they're just trying to make, like, you know, Disney an experience for children and family, the way Disney Plus is sort of like their hub for everything Disney. Now you can listen to it. Now you can, you know, I just hope they don't try to make it like critical. Like, next up, they're like bring like an Elsa toy and you have to like pull the voice box to like hear like a key line for the next movie. Like, I think they're kind of stretching it with
that's how they're gonna make Elsa come out. You pull the string and she's like, I like ladies. Everyone's next movie. Yeah, like,
I hope this is optional homework.
I think it's great if they do like side stories or just like go full into podcast genres, like a true crime podcast about the guy that like embezzled several amounts of money out of the winter section of his big summer blowout. Call it Big Bummer Blowout.
I'm Sarah Koenig.
this year on
was it moral to keep Olaf alive in the summer while he had to watch all of his friends and homes die?
Yoo-hoo, big summer blowout.
Yoo-hoo, big summer blowout.
Sean, Gal and I, we were talking about this a little bit before we started here, but we were wondering if there was a market for kids podcasts, and you said there actually is. And as our resident podcast guru, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, I'm not venturing into it yet, considering that Baby Math Teacher Movies, I'm going to need her to, you know, enjoy podcasts. Like I'll when I have to sacrifice my crazy podcasts and start listening to those and get her into it way too much. But yeah, it's there is something where like NPR starts it off with Wow in the World. There's like kids podcasts that go on kids adventures and also educate. There's various like I think there's like been spinoffs of like different shows and everything that have had their own podcast. So this isn't a terribly new idea. I think it's the first time it's this big of a movie and it's going to be like under the watchful eye of Disney. But there's definitely been a lot of interesting
under his eye.
Yeah, exactly. Jesus.
Yeah, it should be very interesting. I wonder if we're going to see other companies go in this direction. I do think Disney has a little bit more to play with in this realm, especially with, I mean, they already have a market towards children, so it's not like they're trying to build this. And they're just capitalizing on a very large IP that they continue to capitalize on in all aspects of their company, whether that's film, special, like television specials or Disney Plus specials with Olaf, the theme parks, whatever it may be. Let's go back and talk about the delay of Dune Part 2. You reminded me of a really funny meme, Sean, when you were talking about Timothy the Stallion. Timothy, oh my gosh, I just kind of gave it away. The joke was Megan Thee Stallion and Timothy Chalamet are the same age and height. And someone said they also have the same middle name too. Well, anyway, I thought that was really funny. Timothy the Stallion, as I am now referring to him. Dune Part 2 has been delayed to 2024. This is taking the place of Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire, which was set for March 14th. Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire is set to debut on April 12th, just a month later. This is a big move. It's a very, 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 very big move. Is this a sign? I mean, Sean, you mentioned earlier you think it's a sign that they recognize things aren't going the direction they thought they would in terms of these negotiations. Do you think that we're going to see more getting delayed? Because there are some other projects coming down the road. Most notably, we have the Marvels, the Equalizer 3. I think it's next week. That's probably not moving. Wonka, you have a lot of other stuff here. Gal, in your opinion, what are we looking at? Are we heading back to a 2020 where we're starting to see all these films delay, especially when we talk about...
I don't think this will be the last of the delays.
Yeah.
I do think we'll still get like a packed holiday season. I don't think Aquaman will stay in 2023 TBH. Like we haven't even gotten a trailer. And I feel like, I don't know what Gunn's trying to do marketing wise, but I think like for sure, like Momoa, like there's a lot of opportunities there to like, it's weird that like they kept Aquaman, but delayed. I guess they care more about Dune now, even though
that means they care about it. Yeah. If they're keeping something right now in December, it's either because they think that it's an awards holdover and who cares who sees it. Like it's not going to be a box office hit and we're doing it more for awards It's Aquaman 3 or Aquaman 2. And it's like, this is a garbage movie and we're in a lot of trouble. So let's just like in the pandemic when they released stuff like, you know, that Diane Keaton, Kevin Costner movie that no one saw, Let Me Go or something. That went
Diane
to
Lane,
theaters.
But okay.
Diane Lane. Yes.
Recruits too. Fascinating. I do think Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom is a different one to talk about because they're burning that off, right? Like yeah. It's not, we don't think it's going to impact the future of their DC studio plans.
I'm just like, hey, whatever.
Yeah, but other things like The Color Purple still sitting there, which is arguably going to be an awards contender in some way. I think that's pretty interesting. That's still there. And then also looking at Marvel still keeping some of the releases this fall and arguably movies. I would argue that I think the Marvels need some of that press out there with you want to get Iman Vellani out there into the press. Yeah. And that's really going to help the film.
That's one thing. Like on one hand, Iman Vellani is great on the red carpet. She's great in the junket interviews. But on the other hand, Marvel is Marvel.
Marvel.
People are going to see the Marvel movie. Like there's no like, oh, the next Marvel movie is out. Granted, it's slid a bit in like, you know, both quality and interest. But I think those movies still like land on their feet without having Brie Larson and Iman Vellani at the junkets and stuff.
Look, Dune 2 delay really hurts, you know, really was really looking forward to see. That was like my most anticipated for the rest of the year. I was already talking with my friends, going to IMAX and everything. Logic aside, it does hurt. So for that case alone, I do still hope we get the Marvels in November, but you're totally right. Like, especially Iman Vellani, it's going to give like so much like TikTok worthy moments in the press junkets that like they might want to delay it to like February just for that. Like they don't care. Like we'll push Madam Web a year. Like we don't care. But I think we'll still get like Wonka in the holiday season or something like Napoleon or an awards contender like Poor Things. Like you don't need like Willem Dafoe to like talk. But like either you like Yorgos Lanthimos or you don't.
I just love the idea of I think we talked about this before on the pod, but the fact that actors and writers can't do any press, so Ridley Scott is the only one doing press for Napoleon, and he'll just tell every interviewer to fuck off Logan Rose for a style. He is such a grumpy bastard. I can't wait for him to be just because Nolan had to do press on his own, and you know what, he killed it. Like, because you could tell he was like, you know, kind of like snooty to stuff, but he was like very like he welcomed all the dumb, stupid questions. All the press I saw from him, I was like, okay, this guy I normally think is a prick is kind of nailing this. Ridley Scott ain't gonna be doing that dance. He's gonna be furious.
He's just like, I'm not directing the next Alien.
This is all, it's getting really interesting. Gal, I'm wondering if your most anticipated is now the 1-2 punch of Saw Patrol on September 29th, Saw 10, Saw X, and Paw Patrol.
I'm actually pro the creator that weekend. I'm like, y'all should be talking more about that. Like, I haven't seen Saw yet, so I can't get, and I haven't seen Paw Patrol either, but like, that speaks for itself.
I think there's a lot of people on that intersection of that Venn diagram.
So I really hope the creator, first of all, it stays because I'm really excited for it. But also I hope it does well because they decided to move it to the same weekend as Saw X. So
yeah, it's going to be interesting.
I
love when you see a trailer on, like, we all see our trailers for the first time on YouTube or on a computer, unfortunately. But I saw, like, I rewatched the creator trailer on, I think, the largest screen possible. And I was like, oh, they're not fucking around. This is actually genuinely great stuff. And I think that that's going to be, you know, hey, we're all sad about Dune. This will be our Dune for now. Like, this will be, like, the
original. Hey, it could straight up win visual effects just from the trailer.
Oh, like, yeah. Oh, it's so good. It's like really seamless. And I just love seeing it on the big screen. I will say selfishly, I'm very excited and very happy with the Dune moving to, you know, next year.
Because your child.
Because my child's coming in November. And so.
I thought you were going to say I'm very excited for Saw Patrol.
Well, that too. I eventually have to get used to Paw Patrol, I guess. But it was just one of these things where Sam just like shaking her head at me. Because she just says like, everything's just working out for you. Like, this was going to be the time where you had to stay home with the baby, and now you will, and you won't miss any movies because they're all getting delayed or moving to streaming. And so, like, all the big ones like that are coming out so far for the rest of the year now are all kind of streaming movies. Granted, they're going to be coming out earlier in theaters, but I'll be able to watch Killers of the Flower Moon while I hold a small child.
Yeah, I really wonder what, like, I feel like if Flower Moon and Napoleon get a lot of buzz or make, like, the money from the audience, they hope that maybe they'll try to keep it like more than like a month and a half into theaters, because I feel like, I don't know, because it's like, you never know, like Spielberg movies underperform these days, but I wonder, like Leonardo DiCaprio, maybe that'll be enough to drag people into theaters.
I think the problem is that the pretty much people don't go to the theaters anymore at all, and that is because of the promise that it will be available at home very quickly. And so people don't bother getting in their cars now, you know, when, and that's just like, and that's not even with announcements of streaming and anything. Now this is going to be different because literally like the Apple TV logo is going to be there, or the Netflix logo is going to be there. And so pretty much people are going to be like, knowing that this is a Netflix film, they'll say, yeah, no, I'm going to wait and be able to have a Friday in with some pizza and watch it on Netflix. So I think it's even trickier now. I hope they do well in theaters. And so I remember this was pre-pandemic, like Scorsese's Irishman did pretty well in theaters, and they gave it a big run before it even came out on Netflix. And so it'll be interesting to see if that comes out. I could say they could probably do what they want. They could keep it in theaters while it's also on Netflix. I think that that's a tough competition. But
for Apple.
Yeah. Sorry, Apple. Yeah. But yeah, that'll be a tough competition, but it'll be interesting. And then also, you know, I mean, you're going to talk about this a little bit later, but when it comes to run times and everything, you know, people won't go to, like, well, they did for Oppenheimer. Never mind. But
not everyone did for Oppenheimer. And we're going to get to that with Logan Paul.
Well, I mean, yes.
Let's dive into that. Let's move the conversation along, because I think we're going to touch on some of this in rants and raves as well. But I want to wrap up our news stories here with talking about Logan Paul. Never thought I would say that sentence. This is the podcast bro, social media bro, boxer bro, WWE wrestler bro, controversial bro.
It's everyday bro.
Everyday bro. Bro. He walked out of Oppenheimer, apparently, because, quote, nothing happens and it's, quote, just talking. He then said that, quote, separately 18 minutes in Interstellar, and I was considering walking out because it was so slow, and now Interstellar is in my top three movies. Don't really know that that supports him walking out.
He literally contradicts himself right there.
Quote, I didn't know what they were trying to, what are you doing? Everyone's just talking. It's an hour and a half, 90 minutes. It's all exposition, just talking. It's all exposition, nothing happens, he said on his podcast where he is just talking. I want to read some of these reactions here, which are really funny. I don't know if you had a chance to go through these, but some of them are really great. The BuzzFeed compiled all these. So Buddy expected it to be an action movie. Logan Paul leaving Oppenheimer is the only glowing recommendation I would ever need to see the movie multiple times. Bet he sat through Barbie, though.
That pissed him off more than any other hateful comment. Yeah.
Bro went into a drama biopic expecting an MCU movie.
expected J. Robert Oppenheimer and the Dial of Destiny.
Yeah. TikTok has ruined people's attention span. If Logan Paul didn't like the movie, that's a pretty big compliment towards the movie. LOL.
I will say this is him also. He's a stupid, stupid person, but he also is smart enough with his brand. And this is kind of the stuff you would say to enhance your brand. Like, he walked into that theater expecting to walk out in about like 18 minutes. This might be a little bit too galaxy brain for me, but I think there's a part of me that says like, oh yeah, no, I'm going to go in there and then I'm going to go out and people already think I'm an idiot. People already think I'm stupid. This will enhance that brand even more if I say that.
Yeah.
So this is like tinfoil hat, right, galaxy brain kind of stuff. And then I'm giving him probably too much credit, which is tough, but I do think that, and fuck it. This is the first time we ever talked about Logan Paul on this podcast.
And we've talked about his brother on the podcast. Remember Jake Paul with that boxing movie that he's going to be doing. I forgot about that. Didn't you? Me too.
I watched the Netflix documentary, one of him.
But speaking of Netflix documentaries on wrestlers and boxers and stuff, this is actually on Peacock. There's one about Cody Rhodes that's really interesting. It's called The American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes. I highly recommend it. It's a really good look at the.
Now, it's interesting because there's a lot of like actual WWE wrestling on Peacock right now. Is this documentary sanctioned by?
It is. It's a WWE documentary.
Yeah. That always makes me feel a little bit icky, but it still could be good, I bet.
It dives into his family and stuff, and it talks a lot about the. I mean, he left the company, and he's very open and honest in the documentary about why he left the company. And it doesn't paint WWE in the best light all the time.
Interesting. So,
yeah, it was a good one. But anyway, I digress there. The reason I bring this up with Logan Paul is it's interesting to see him now talking about movies like this. And I do, part of it is he's, you know, trying to appeal to anybody he can to get more listeners. And of course, it's all about the bottom line there. But I'm wondering what this does for Oppenheimer. Does it, you know, does, because I can't imagine that there is a giant cross section between Logan Paul listeners and Oppenheimer viewers, or is there? And does this ultimately, you know, boost Oppenheimer a little bit?
I feel like Oppenheimer's crossed into the mainstream, to be honest. I feel like even like gym bros are going to Oppenheimer just because it's like, it's hella trending now. Also, like, he hated Nope. So I feel like it's just funny to be like, Logan Paul hated this movie, but this movie was fire. Also, adding to the bro reactions, I'm going to say bro probably liked Heart of Stone.
Hey, come on. That's unrealistic. Nobody liked Heart of Stone.
I'm going to send them a message and ask.
So I think that what's interesting about this is that I've listened to a lot of like sports podcasts, and I don't listen to the sports podcasts to hear about their movie takes, but they sometimes bring them on. And these are like, you know, bro, like uncultured, like kind of people. And they all loved Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer does have that reach and that expanse that's a little bit more than what we see usually. And I wonder, God, I wonder if Logan stayed in there for the full 3 hours, would he like it? I mean, it passed the parents test for me. My parents and I have very different like views of that. And like, especially with a 3 hour movie, he was like, I didn't look at my watch once. And I think there's certain levels of, you know, and you're going to talk about the 3 hourness a little bit later, but I think that there's certain levels of this where you can do something that is both intelligent, make a film that's intelligent, and appease the masses. And that's also the mark of, get ready for it, a best picture. And so we'll see how that goes later. And, you know, there's still plenty of time, but that's the exact kind of like movie you need to appeal the masses. And so it'll be interesting to, you know, see where this all goes.
I also wonder if he actually did this.
Oh yeah, he didn't.
Yeah, it's all
like I said, this is literally
like
all
he
brand.
He might have just stayed for the whole movie and he's like, oh, what will get me trending now? I walked out. I'll say I walked out. I won't tell him that I found out that the Americans won the war. I didn't get to that war.
I don't know what happened. I am also just very against shutting off a movie. And Sam hates this. I'm very against walking out of a movie. I'm very against shutting off a movie. Like, yeah. If I want to walk out of a movie, I'm going to be using that in my review. It ain't going to be looking good for that movie when I do that. But I like the idea of I'd never want to shut off a movie. I think I've only shut off one movie like of recently. And that was that Luck animated movie because it was just in the style of Coco Melon. And I was like, no, I can't do it.
I only ever walked out of one movie. I think I mentioned this before. One movie in a theater. And it was Willard with Crispin Glover, the remake.
Deep cut, my man. Willard.
Let's get to rants and raves here. There's a few of us on, so we're going to power through these. But rants-wise, I want to start off with one that I think Sean and I are going to be at odds here with. This is like people taking off their shoes on an airplane, people that take off their shoes at a movie theater. I want to
vomit. Wait, y'all have never taken your shoes off in the plane?
I've taken my shoes off on the plane as well.
You both are disgusting.
Oh, okay.
This is perfectly fine.
You do not take your shoes, your feet are dirty fucking things in these. Hold on.
In an international flight, when you're sleeping, I'm not sleeping with my shoes on.
If you are in a separate little bungalow or whatever, in an international flight, feel free. If you are on a Spirit Airlines where we're basically sitting on top of one another as it is, or any American airline for that matter, because we're all like on top of each other like sardines and packed in. Don't take your shoes off. That's disgusting. I don't know where your feet have been. They're disgusting. So the fact that you're taking them off, and a lot of people will also put them on the seats in front of them, and this is back to movie theaters.
That's bad.
If I see your feet up there with your socks or whatever, and sometimes not even socks, you are disgusting.
That's bad.
And I will file a complaint against you at the theater.
Okay, I'll give you that. I very discreetly take the shoes off. It's just a nice, like, comforting way to just know that I'm there. And I probably wouldn't do it in a crowded theater. So if there's no one next to me, I'll take my shoes off.
You did it when we saw Black Widow. I'm kidding.
That's why I had you get the beer, because I was in socks.
Anyway.
All right, so am I up?
Go, Sean.
Oh, yeah, my Gran Turismo theater experience. So I, you know, at the very quick story, you know, saw the movie. There was a huge interview before the movie, which was a little bit annoying because that wasn't really told for me or anything like that. But cool, inside look and everything like that. But then after the interview, when the movie was beginning to start, the lights not only didn't go down, they went up to the fullest amount. And so I'm kind of like sitting there and I'm like, no other people are moving. So I was like, all right, cool. I'll just run out, grab someone there. And then they eventually fixed it. But then the entire time the movie was, thankfully it didn't ruin it entirely, but the movie was in a square ratio. So, you know, I didn't really catch Jan's name at the corner sometimes when they were racing and stuff like that. I'm able to get through context clues. It didn't kill everything. But I just think that at this point, you know, in a theater, there's a lot of people working there. And guess what? Their job is actually genuinely tough and they get paid shit for it. But there was a bunch of people just sitting there. I think that they should just assign someone to just be at the start of each movie or check on it somewhere just to make sure, like, so I don't have to run out and get the and miss a part of the movie and get them to turn.
I worked at a movie theater until recently, and we would have someone at the beginning of every screening just to stand there to see the lights go on in the movie starting fine.
It just makes so much sense. That blew my mind. I mean, one time I was ready to watch Nightmare Alley, and instead it was Clifford the Big Red Dog.
Which, I forgot about that.
That was one of my favorite experiences in the movie theater, because the dread of all of these goth like film snob kids. They were just like, wait a minute, that's a red puppy.
Nightmare but, fuel.
Yeah, so that's my quick rant. It's just it was just unfortunate that like so many things were kind of going wrong in it, and you know, still didn't really affect my enjoyment of the movie, but it could have gotten close.
But at least
I still have trauma from like my Talk to Me theater experience because everyone there was younger than me. I don't know how, but
yeah, but
like,
guys,
I'm only 21. It's like everyone there were like,
at least you both took your shoes off. It was fine.
Yeah.
And like, I literally told the people in front of me and Talk to Me to like be quiet. And they're like, but it's a horror movie. And I'm like, but it's a movie. Like,
yeah.
These are the people that see Matt Rife TikToks and think like they're allowed to talk during comedy shows. It's like, no, just his because he does crowd work. Like, and even then, don't talk during comedy shows. Like, this is like the cliche. Like, yeah, scream during the horror movie or say don't go in there during the horror movie. But come on, what are we doing?
No, Gal, talk to us about runtime. Like narrating everything. Okay,
oh, that's frustrating.
Back
that's
to the subject of Oppenheimer.
Wait, sorry, I cut you off there and I didn't mean to. Please get that person kicked out of the theater next time because those people do not deserve to be in public.
I didn't want to miss anything important. It's such a good movie. It's a really good movie. I didn't want to miss any of it. I was like, talk to me. So my rant, don't worry, that's not how I act when I see a good movie. But so my rant is going back to the subject of run times. Personally, if your movie's good and it's well-paced, go ahead, go crazy. If you're a Nolan movie, go crazy. I've been spending quite some time trying to convince my dad that he should go watch Oppenheimer. He's like, but I don't have the patience to sit through a three-hour movie. By the way, just a couple months ago, he went and saw Avatar: The Way of Water in theaters. So like, I don't know why he's complaining. And also, by the way, my mom, when Avatar: The Way of Water came out, was complaining. Like, why should a movie be 3 hours and 12 minutes? And I'm like, first of all, my family loves Schindler's List and Titanic, both longer than both of these movies. And then I'm like, by the way, mom, this 3 hour, 12 minute movie is like the third highest grossing of all time. So basically what I'm saying is if 3 hour movies are not for you, then you don't go. But like, watch the movie before you judge the runtime.
Yeah.
If you are willing to give a Christopher Nolan movie with Cillian Murphy's Oppenheimer 3 hours of your time, awesome. But don't just be like, 3 hours, that sucks. Like, I know we all love Titanic. I know you love Titanic. So don't act like this is the 3 hour runtime is the problem.
So I think it's important because I'm just going to speak for Joe on this because Joe hates 3 hour runtimes, but then ends up loving so many 3 hour movies anyway. And so I think that's the important thing. It's like you see that 3 hour runtime, and I think all of us humanly react with, oh God, we're listening to this. But then we end up like loving them. I've been in longer 90-minute movies than I've been in 3 hour movies.
Yeah.
And so that's the most important thing. It's like, hey, if they keep that pace, if they keep that interesting, imagine missing Oppenheimer because you're worried about the 3 hour runtime. That's just like, that's a bummer and a half, man, because you're missing something beautiful.
I think the qualifier.
It's like I said, like watch before you judge. Like Mission Impossible: Dead Reckoning, 2 hours 43 minutes. I did not feel it one bit. Like it felt like it's an hour longer than Morbius. It felt shorter. So like,
there was a couple of moments in Mission Impossible: Dead Reckoning where I felt it. You know, when the robot turned out to be at the party.
The qualifier that Gal led with though is if it's well paced and you're doing a good job with the construction of the film, then it's going to be one thing. A lot of times when I see a 3 hour runtime, I'm grunting because I know that my screening is going to start at 7 o'clock, and that means I won't be getting home until close to 11 that night. And that, you know, I'm an old man. So that's number one. Number two is that I would argue that I hate runtimes that fall between 2 and 3 more than I hate 3. If you're 3, then like, yes, it's, I'm like, oh God, that's a long ass movie, but usually they're well earned.
Yeah.
If it's like 220, 230, I'm like, you didn't know what you were doing with like what you wanted to cut, what you wanted to include. And that's what drives me crazy. Cause there's so many of them. There's so many of those that like just get so obnoxious. And like, and they're the reviews where like most of the time I'm like, could have lost a half hour, could have lost 25 minutes.
So if you're saying over 3, did you like Babylon? That's my question for you.
Oh, he didn't see it yet. I don't think he ever.
Oh, you haven't seen Babylon?
But I'll do his review for you. 1 out of 5. Fuck this movie. I love that
movie, actually.
I can't wait for you to see it and absolutely adore it more than anything else.
It's more just a point. Like I'm not seeing it because of this now. No, I'm trying to think of like long movies that I mean, I've liked every long movie that I've seen recently.
Yeah, no, like I mean, Bo is Afraid is the one that like does not make any sense that you like that one, because that is just the craziest shit in the world that's for 3 hours, and you absolutely you love that movie more than me, which that turns the universe upside down. Like truly,
I actually love that movie.
I didn't
feel it. Like, it also helped that I was watching it. Like, I turn my phone off at the start of every movie screening, and I was just watching it like all in one sitting. So I didn't feel that it was as long as The Wolf of Wall Street. And I, for the most part, I think Bo is Afraid earned it, to be honest.
Oh, it was a fun movie. It was a very fun movie. Yeah. Like,
I
definitely didn't love it though.
Listen to the backtracking here.
No, I gave it a B. What do you want from me? It was just
what do you want
a little
me?
Bit too insane. And like it just ventured into too insane for me. And, you know, this is coming from someone that, you know, his favorite movie of 2019 was The Lighthouse. But so now you don't know where I'm coming from, but it was just too bonkers. But you know,
I'm looking at 3 hour movies and like which ones I enjoyed, which ones I didn't enjoy now, and I haven't found one that I haven't that I didn't like.
This is great,
which is kind of interesting.
Oh, man. Break the streak, watch Babylon.
I said one I have seen.
I want you to, you to live stream
King Kong in 2005. That bullshit didn't have to be 3 hours.
I actually love King Kong. I'm sorry.
Of course you did.
I'm on pop.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I loved the King. It's interesting because I think starting in like late 2021, where we had like Dune, Eternals, West Side Story, House of Gucci. Like since then, we've had a lot of like 2.5-3 hour movies in the last year and a half. And even like this last year, half of the best picture nominees were 2 hour 20 plus, which is interesting.
I mean, I think about Gran Turismo. Where
is that
like
a rule?
Two hours and 17 minutes. And I remember seeing that runtime and, you know, hey, I enjoyed the movie. It was a pretty high octane one, but like, man, they could have trimmed like, cause like 2 hours.
I agree there.
For an intense, like amazing, like, you know, like, high speed racing movie. It's like 2 hours 17. Now, dude.
All right, let's get into raves here. I want to start with Recap Podcast. I've become a big fan of Recap Podcast.
You are big on the recaps.
I really enjoy them because I think, you know, the ones that I'm obviously listening to are ones that are covering shows that I feel a certain way about and probably enjoyed. So The Office Ladies was the one that really kind of launched this for me. And I've just really enjoyed going through all the seasons with them. I think they're on season 8 or 9, wow. 8 right now, I believe. Yeah. Like they're powering through. But it's just really, it's fun to hear the behind the scenes and get some of the context around them and hear from some of those that were involved behind the writers or the directors or, even like production designers and such. Smallville's doing this, or at least Michael Rosenbaum and Tom Welling are doing this with Talkville, which is a lot of fun. And they're like two very unique personalities, Michael Rosenbaum in particular. So to hear like the behind the scenes there about what was happening in a show that I was obsessed with growing up is really cool. And the most recent one is Just Jack and Will about Will and Grace. They just released episode 10, like they're very early on in this. But it's just, it's kind of charming. But it's also really interesting because of the context of the show in the time that it was released and, you know, what the show deals with and some of the challenges that they had early on with marketing and finding their place. And it wasn't a hit right off the bat, but it also was during NBC's heyday of must-see TV and the comedies that were all like going wild on NBC at the time. And just, I mean, you can also tell that the cast, they're still very, very, very good friends. The only one who hasn't been on the first 10, though, and I'm interested by this, is Megan Mullally. So I'm waiting to hear from her. But they've had the creators on. They've had the director, like the famed director who did every episode. They've had Deborah Messing on. And it's just, it's charming because it's a show that I watch on a regular basis. It's like my nighttime show to feel good before I go to bed. I'm on like my 11th rewatch of the series.
I'm laughing because you brought up Deborah Messing and I was just thinking about her cameo in Bros.
Yeah.
Like the funniest thing ever.
Not now, Deborah Messing.
Not now, Deborah Messing. But yeah, it's really enjoyable. And I think that some of these podcasts are just really showing that there is an appetite to kind of go back to some of the shows that we all hold dear to ourselves. So I highly recommend that one because it's great to listen to. Sean,
yeah, one I want to recommend is Pod Meets World as well, mainly because like these are people that were child stars at the time and have grown up, and it's interesting to see the reflections of it, and it's just, like, a fascinating one, and it's Will Friedle, Danielle Fishel, and Ryder Strong. It's really fascinating to see them both.
Well, but anyway, what's his name is busy with his Senate campaign or whatever he's doing.
Oh, God. What a world. So I would like to talk about How To with John Wilson, which maybe I've talked about this before in previous seasons, but this is a Max documentary series where this guy is like kind of like Wes Bentley from American Beauty. He just films everything and he creates a story out of it. And they are sort of the guys of like How To videos, like how to use a public restroom in New York or how to catch the big game. And the one that's How To Catch a Big Game, what happens is they spiral into just an uncertain insanity as they keep on going, going, and going. Like, so the How To Watch a Big Game, he ended up trying to clean his house to invite people over, but his vacuum was messed up. So he went to the vacuum store and then the vacuum repair store. At the vacuum repair store, I saw a poster for a vacuum convention. So he went to the vacuum convention, and then he ended up like, so he's now at a vacuum convention when this original idea was him going to see sports on there. And then it just like actually gets into something that, like, first of all, you could talk to this being absolutely crazy and goofy and funny. But then also there's like heartwarming moments at the end where he connects to his grandmother with a vacuum and like his dead grandmother with a vacuum. Like, I'm not doing it justice verbally, but this episode I saw kind of my jaw dropped because I'm just like,
The description you gave it.
I know.
Like, reminds me of like an idiot abroad or something.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. Like very close to that. I mean, it's something that's just so strange, and how they tie back in every single one. It's kind of amazing and it's insane, but also just always surprisingly touching. And this guy has done 3 seasons. This 3rd season is going to be his last. The 1st season ended with the pandemic. So it was like great pandemic watching. And then they're just all these insane, like goofy things. And like he has these like little clips throughout where he's just like, and sometimes you don't have time to get ready in the morning. And it's just a guy flossing his teeth in the street. And like, cause he like had that one time on his B-roll. And so he threw it in there throughout the narration, but this narration just always devolves into something that's absolutely chaotic and insane. And I love this show so much. It's got heart, which a show like this doesn't need to have heart. You could just laugh and be like how insane this is and everything, but it works. It works every way.
You you find these little nuggets that I like put on a list that I need to watch.
This I think you would love this one. I can't see a person not loving this. Even like my family who's straight edge are probably going to be like, what the hell is this? They even may dive into it a little bit. I hope.
Very nice. Very nice. All right, Gal, hit us.
Okay, so I'm going to be recommending a show that's scripted, but I watched it over a couple days, and it's really entertaining. I don't think it's getting the crowd that it deserves, and it's The After Party on Apple TV+. Basically, if you like Knives Out, or if you like the Agatha Christie, if you like whodunits, this is, I don't want to say must watch, but it's very, very entertaining. I think the first episode kind of starts out okay, but once you get past that, it actually gets really good. Tiffany Haddish is basically playing like female Benoit Blanc, which she's like really enjoying herself in this. And basically there's a murder of a pop star named Xavier, who's so hilariously played by Dave Franco. And wait, by the way, have you guys watched this before I start talking about it?
I'm midway through season 2.
Okay. So I've finished season 1.
Yeah. Don't watch season 2.
So, so basically,
this went out of sales. My apologies, it's not as good.
But the reason I'm raving about season 1 is because it's really entertaining. Basically, each episode is told through someone's different perspective, but it's also told through different film genres, which is fun. Like Ben Schwartz feels like he's born to like rap and sing in this show, or Ike Barinholtz is like, really funny. Sam Richardson also really good, which. I guess I'm going to toot my own horn here a little bit, but I've been doing like these series of like rising star posts on Instagram to like commemorate like actors who I think are on the rise. And I did one about him and he actually liked my post, which I was like, whoa, that's insane. So that was really cool. And he's really good in this show. he's like the only one who's like unconditionally likable, but they're all really good. And it's entertaining because you have the past and the present storylines moving forward. And like alone, like neither of them works on its own, but they like help each other create an interesting experience. And it's really funny. Like there's just some laugh out loud moments in this. It's not, I'm not going to say it's like as good as Knives Out or even like Only Murders in the Building, but it's really fun. And I haven't heard many people talk about it. And I just started on Apple and I finished season one recently. So it's a fun one.
Yeah, the season one is absolutely spectacular. And that's probably one of the reasons why season two is just having so much trouble with me. I've like, it's doing the same thing, but with a different murder. And they don't have as many fun ideas of the stories. Cause like in the first one, the stories are like, you know, Ben Schwartz is in a musical in his story. And, you know, there's a rom-com angle, there's an action movie angle. This new one is like, there's a Wes Anderson angle, there's a film noir angle, there's a Wong Kar-wai angle, I think. And I'm like, I think you're losing this second season starts to lose a little bit of the magic that made the first season so perfect. So I will subscribe to you with season one. Season one's amazing. Check out season two. See what you think. I'd love to talk.
Yeah, I'm going to start it soon. I'm just waiting for all of it to come out and I'm going on a trip soon. So I'm like, so when I get back, After Party season two is at the top of my priority list.
I'm going to be curious to see what you think. Cause I fully agree with you on season one. It's amazing.
For sure.
Because film and television is what? Subjective.
Ah, there he is. There he is.
I like how you say it like Sean doesn't know it already.
I sometimes
no kidding. Hey, I know it's more me.
You once tried to fight me because I gave a Judy Blume documentary a B.
Because it was a fucked up reasoning for that. Actually, to be fair, I've told this story real quick.
Judy Blume was my childhood. I'm gonna lie.
Well, don't talk to Sean about the documentary. He'll knock it.
That's fine.
There was a Red, White, and Royal Blue. I really enjoyed it, obviously, and I'm all for people not enjoying it and having like good reasons for it and whatever. But I left the screening with my buddy Jeremy, and Jeremy goes, "It's a really good movie. I had a lot of fun with it. No notes, really. 3.5 out of 5. I was like,
"I hate that."
What? And I so like to this day, like
I feel like that was me with the most recent Jumanji movie or something.
There is something about that where it's like one of the best films of the year, absolutely unassailable. Every single bit of this is perfect. This movie is completely perfect. There is absolutely nothing wrong. 3.5 out of 5 stars.
It drives me insane.
You're not exaggerating, by the way. There are people like this.
It's insane.
And I've been pushing back.
One of the best action movies ever made. 7.5 out of 10.
Yeah. Or no, the ones that get me are the ones that are like, I give it a 78.394 out of 100.
Oh yeah.
But
fucked
I'm like,
up rubric they have.
Yeah, but like I keep ripping on him. I keep ripping on Jeremy because he'll like send me a message and he's like, "Oh, I put a new review ready to go up on the website." And I was like, "Oh, did you enjoy it?" And he's like, "Yeah, I really enjoyed it." I'm like 3.5. Like it's just that drives me nuts. But so it's not quite as bad with Judy Blume because you support your reasons. Or your decisions, I should say, and your ratings most of the time. No, I'm kidding. All right, well, let's talk about what's coming out this week. It is a boomer week in the States for movies. We have The Equalizer 3 hitting theaters, which is a thing. And then Bottoms is expanding nationwide. It does come out. It did come out this past week. But it looks like it's hitting a lot more theaters next week. So, Sean, I'll be really interested for you to...
That's going
to
be my Thursday movie. I can't wait.
I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it. Gal, have you seen Bottoms yet?
No, I'm flying next week and I think I'm going to go watch it with a friend. Nice. I'm really excited. I kind of recently checked out Shiva Baby, which I really liked. And also I've basically become an Iowa Debris fan page. Just
same here.
Like owning this year. So I'm really excited to watch that one. I think I'm flying a bit to like before I go to TIFF, I'm flying to like, California. So I think that'll be the movie I watch with my friend. And then I'm going to TIFF and watch like a bunch of different movies. So nice. Bottoms definitely want to watch it. But Equalizer, I think
pass.
I didn't like the first two.
I didn't see
I love
the first
Denzel.
Two. Yeah.
Like Pedro Pascal was in the second one, right?
Oh.
I really didn't like that one. And third one, the trailer doesn't look that inviting. Like I'll probably watch it when it comes out on digital, but I don't think I'll go to the theater for it.
It's a bummer that like they can't promote their movies right now because we'd be seeing Denzel and Dakota everywhere because that's like a cool reunion. Yeah. Like that's a very cool reunion and we're not really getting like the most out of that.
But you guys might hate me for this. I don't really like Man on Fire.
I'm with you there.
It's not something I like. I'm not going to go to war for. Tony Scott movies are weird, but with all due respect to the gentleman,
I think it's some of the worst editing I've ever seen in a movie.
Well, that's intentional Tony Scott editing. I just watched The Taking of
Pelham. But in Unstoppable, like, it works.
he just has this style where, like, Sam was watching one of his movies and she, like, got up after 5 minutes and said, "I'm out. Too much talking."
Which one was it?
It was Taking of Pelham 1-2-3. Just the opening credits of, like, the shaky subway and the, like.
Sam hated it. It was terrible. Worst movie ever. 3.5. All right, guys. Well, this has been a lot of fun. Gal, I've had an absolute blast talking with you. Glad we finally got you on the pod. Tell everyone where they can find you, Mr. Film Toppings.
Oh, my God. It's been so great. It's been great laughing with you guys, chatting movies, learning insight, trading knowledge about Ginger Spice having been in this movie that we didn't know about. basically, you can find me at Film Toppings on Instagram, where I post most frequently. Me and my friend Alan also have a podcast at Film Fanatics on YouTube and on Instagram, Film Fanatics Pod. So check out our stuff. We're really trying to get to 100 subs on YouTube soon. So help a bro out.
Excellent, excellent. And on that YouTube front, not to like overshadow, I'm 25 away from 1,000, which is really small, and I don't put enough time on YouTube. So the fact that
I just
I'm even
helped
there,
you after you posted about it.
Thank you. One of my friends who works at a restaurant, when I stopped in the other night, she's like, "I subscribed." And I was like, "Oh, okay." Thank you. Sweet. But yeah, those of us who are familiar with YouTube know that once you hit 1,000, it opens some doors and there's some more that you can do with it. So I'm just trying to get to that threshold.
So, Gal, I just want to like highlight with your account, one of the most frustrating and amazing parts of it is when you do the three, what is it? Is it three actors in a movie or three movies with an actor?
I used to do like this movie has these three actors, now I do this actor has been in these three movies,
and I'm telling you, I lose my mind on some of these because some of them have these like gigantic casts, and so I'm like going through each one of them and I'm like, okay, there was one I was on the Cape, you ruined my vacation because I could not get it, and it drove me nuts because I know the casts of all of these. I forget which one it was, but I know the casts of all of them. I was so angry, and like I forget
the thing
is,
I've done a lot of the bigger actors, so now I'm going for like character actors, more like people who have maybe like done less movies in the last 5 or 6 years. But there's
still, better believe I got that Will Patton one, baby. I'm getting Will Patton every damn time.
Will Patton's great.
Will Patton's great.
Coach Yost, come on, you know Coach Yost.
I just
Yost,
watched go. Silo, and he's really good in it.
Silo is such a crazy show, dude.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. The deviations that we've taken on this podcast today.
I think all of them are my
favorite. We went from Deborah Messing to Will Patton to...
Deborah Messing, Will Patton, Mickey Mouse measuring his dick. A lot of stuff going on here. Gal, thank you so much for being here. Sean, welcome back, and we'll see you all next week.
The Guy at the Movies podcast is a joint venture between Math Teacher Movies and Guy at the Movies. You can catch new episodes weekly right here wherever you're listening to this one. Subscribe so you never miss a beat.